Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right. Good morning to you. Friday morning conversations here on the Mark Cox Morning Show. Wish you were here. Just have to say, there's Snowmageddon round 2 has kind of been overblown as of right now. I'll just have to tell you that. I woke up this morning. There was not a drop of snow anywhere. I was told it was going to start 11 o'clock, midnight. By 5 a.m. right now, there are some flurries out there that I experienced. But if you are getting out of bed and you're listening to 97.1 this morning, first of all, thank you. If you've tuned into the stream and you're watching this, thank you. You're going to have no problem, I don't believe, with your morning commute. As of right now, they're claiming it's still going to be snowing at 9 a.m. So if the snow comes down in certain areas, I know down south in Farmington, in those areas, it's expected to be a little heavier. I can only relate my experience. Kim, was yours any different coming in?
No. I mean, my husband had his car outside in our driveway, so I noticed a little bit of snow on top of it. Not much. Roads were not bad. I did see two plows on I-64 near downtown. They had those flashing lights on, so I was practically blinded. They were going about 30 miles per hour, so there were semi-trucks and probably a few other cars like mine, and we're all just thinking, what is, come on, your plow's not even down on the road and you're going 30 miles an hour right now on I-64.
And what did you see to your right when you looked?
I saw you cruising on one of the, it looks like you got off at an earlier exit and you were smarter about it than I was because I didn't see the plows in time. And all of a sudden I see you, I say flying, Mark, you weren't flying, but you were flying in comparison to the speed I was going. And you beat those plows.
Thank you.
You deserve an award for that. That was genius.
I got stuck behind them the morning of the first snowfall last on Monday, and it took me an extra 15 or 20 minutes to get downtown. I was almost late for my own show. So this time I saw him from a distance. I'm like, if I get off here just past Jefferson there on 22nd and I go down that flyover ramp, you could turn and go to the soccer stadium, but if you just go straight, it continues back onto the interstate right at the 14th Street exit. And it was beautiful. It worked out beautifully. I got ahead of the snow plows, and I was able to get off at 14th without even slowing down hardly. Not that I was going too fast. It was one of those beautiful timing things that worked out
beautifully.
Well,
no, I did see you get airborne at one point.
Shh, don't say that.
I should probably say that that is probably not advisable in the daylight.
We advise that
Carl.
You haul ass and go as fast
as
you possibly can.
Like to mention.
If you get airborne, it's fine.
Here's the other thing we noticed. the plows weren't doing anything.
They could have been spraying.
They could have been. Well,
I
they
saw
could have
nothing.
Been salt, but she
that,
was
but
behind
that,
him and saw nothing.
That would have come out from the back of the plow, and I could be wrong, but I saw nothing going down on the roads.
So here's the. Yesterday, I noticed Alexis Zotos over at Channel 4 finally put out a post similar to mine, because I'm not going to claim that she put it out because of my post 2 days ago that got 109,000 views on Facebook. I'm just pointing that out. She texted yesterday, it's like the turn lanes still haven't been touched since Monday. The on-ramp from Olive to Lindbergh is snow-covered and dangerous. When will MoDOT finish the roads? This is Alexis Zotos, the investigative reporter from Channel 4, who put this out yesterday. You know, 2 days ago, I put out that video at 141 and 64. The off-ramp was a mess. And then somebody pointed out to me, that intersection is directly below the MoDOT headquarters. Like, they could look out their windows from the emergency center, op center there, and see how bad that intersection was.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until yesterday on my way home that I saw MoDOT snow plows working on Outer 40 and some of those roads. Now, they didn't clean them completely, because when I went by this morning, I could still see snowpack and snow cover on those roads. I don't know. I got some sound this morning from some of the county people yesterday who were claiming it's not our fault. It was a historic snowfall. I don't know. I know people that lived through the blizzard here years ago. This was not historic. It's the most snow we've had in a while. But again, you've got one job. One job. Your job is to clean the roads. And we're a week out, and there are still roads that I wouldn't let my 17-year-old daughter drive on. That's why so many schools are still closed. Like Ethan was telling me this morning, they called off his schools again.
Wow.
Is it on the forecast of snow, or is it because of what's still left from last week? I don't know.
Probably both. I mean, even some of the streets here in downtown St. Louis, and I know not a ton of people are driving downtown, but they don't even look like they've been touched.
Well, in some cases, they haven't. Ask Carl.
Yep.
I hate to keep going back to that, but in some cases, they haven't been touched. And they haven't been. That's something they haven't been doing in years. But the primary roads should be clean by now. And in some cases, they're still not. And somebody got mad at me for suggesting it's DEI. Wait till you hear what they've done with DEI in L.A. The definition of DEI is didn't earn it. In other words, you've got people in jobs that are either protected because they're union jobs, or they got promoted because nobody else wanted the job, and it's not the best person for the job, but that's what you're stuck with. Then an emergency hits, and everybody's scratching their head as to why things went to hell in a handbasket. This isn't a surprise. None of it's a surprise. We shouldn't be surprised. I know people that have worked in and around MoDOT and the street crews, and they're like, their opinion is it's not as good as it used to be because they're underpaid. The best people either retired or they moved on to a department where they can make more money. Now, it doesn't mean there aren't some people out there working hard this morning, and we appreciate you, but you got to admit, somebody dropped the ball here. That usually goes to the top of the pile. And that in leadership, and that's not happening in this case. All they're doing is making excuses. So we'll talk more about that for you coming up in just a minute. Carl, let's get to our top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
Madam Vice President, I know you're directly affected, so you fire away. No pun intended.
Indeed.
It's just embarrassing. Even Kamala Harris, the most famous DEI hire currently in a position of authority in the United States, was stunned that Joe Biden made a fire joke at that news conference yesterday.
There's water coming out there. You can use it.
I appreciate it. I'm going to make the call to address everything I can right now.
People, I'd like to make sure you do. Can I have an opportunity to at least tell people you're doing what you're saying you're doing?
Wow. That video right there is going to haunt Gavin Newsom for the rest of his political career. A citizen comes up to him, begs answers as to why there is no water in the lines to save her house. And he tells her he'll get back to her. He's trying to get a hold of President Biden on the phone, and he shows her his cell phone. Unbelievable.
This is my longest ever interview of a president.
Yeah, well, the longest ever before this was one question, and it would rush you out of the room, right?
Yeah, that was President Trump yesterday acknowledging that once again, the world is about to shift when it comes to access to your president. Like, he doesn't hide from anybody. And they've been hiding Biden for 4 years.
1 inch of sleet is like working 4 inches of snow.
They believe this next snow will be lighter and easier to scrape. They're already preparing to treat major roadways again.
Yeah, there it was, ladies and gentlemen. That was the excuse given yesterday for why your roads are still crap in many areas. That was it.
So it's the sleet that was causing the biggest issues.
1 inch of sleet is like 5 inches of snow, and that just took us longer. No. Put me in charge for a day. I've never driven a snowplow in my life, and I will guarantee you I could have done a better job than MoDOT did in St. Louis County within 48 hours of that snowstorm. Here's the simple thing. Put the trucks on the highway. Have them go from the river to the river and all the way into the city, and then turn around and get back on the highway and go back. And then turn around and get back on the highway and go back and do that until the roads are clean. I don't care if you have to work overtime. This is your job. You have one job. And it didn't get done. And then it was like, in the meantime, I don't know if they had, I guess, crew shortages. They just ignored the off-ramps. So then if you did manage to get on the highway, good luck getting back off if you're in a car that doesn't have four-wheel drive.
It's funny,
good
too, luck. Because MoDOT was laying out its plow priorities, and it talked about obviously the main interstates, the heavily traveled highways are number one, then the less traveled highways and roads, you know, number two, which they still really haven't hit. And then they say, and after the storm is over, which basically would have been from Monday until today, this latest round, they're supposed to start cleaning up any snow that accumulated on the shoulder. Does anybody feel like they've done that? Because again, as I'm driving on 64, I'm having to get over lanes because some of the actual lanes of the interstate, not just the shoulder, all of a sudden are snow covered in ice, and I have to shift over very quickly. And when it's pitch black, that can be dangerous.
Yeah.
So thank goodness we go to work at weird hours and there's not a lot of cars, so it's not usually a problem for me to get over abruptly. That should not be the case 4 days after the storm stopped.
So for those of you with sedans, you know, like the little four-door cars that sit low to the ground, if you have any questions about what happens when you hit one of those snow walls at a moderate speed, ask Carl Middleman. Carl, what happened to your car?
It started making a noise.
A weird noise, like a kind of noise. We don't know what it is.
And it went away yesterday. My guy.
You thought it was the transmission. I thought maybe it had damaged
the exhaust
manifold where it comes out before you get to the muffler.
My guy, who's a girl, she said you probably scratched something that and knocked something loose that probably just needs to be welded. And I don't know what happened.
Wow.
But yesterday, after I was coming home from the hockey game, it wasn't making that noise anymore.
Send MoDOT the bill if you start hearing the noise again.
Yeah, well.
You know, they are warning people about snow missiles. They're saying, and I actually watched this happen on 270 yesterday. It was kind of scary.
I saw it Tuesday.
Because people are lazy and they don't want to clear off the snow and ice from the top of the roof of their car. And so you're driving 60 miles an hour down the interstate and boom, that snow and ice flies off like a dang knife. It is coming through people's windshields. Like, it's shattered multiple people's windshields across the St. Louis area.
I saw a Channel 4's interview with some lady yesterday whose Jeep window got broken.
That'd be so scary.
All right, let's get to the fray on this Friday morning. We'll be right back.
Sure.
What were you talking to Barack Obama about?
It did look very friendly, I must say. I didn't realize it. How friendly it looked. I saw it on your wonderful network just a little while ago before I came in, and I said, "Boy, they look like two people that like each other," and we probably do. We have little different philosophies, right? But we probably do. I don't know. We just got along. But I got along with just about everybody on that. We met backstage, as you know, before we went on. And I thought it was a beautiful service, but we all got along very well, which is good.
So I didn't get to watch that news conference where Peter Ducey was asking him about the Carter funeral. I watched bits and pieces of the Carter funeral. It started just as the show ended, and we were kind of doing play-by-play on the presidents as they came in and sat down, which somebody pointed out to me. They were seated in the order they served, which is how that worked. And had it worked out that Michelle Obama could have ended her extended vacation in Hawaii, she would have been sitting right next to Donald Trump, but something came up. She had a thing, and she couldn't make it. So Barack ended up sitting right next to Donald Trump. In every other case, the wife was a buffer between the presidents, right? And I don't know, for better or for worse, not that George W. Bush minded, because he got to sit next to his buddy Hillary Clinton. But in this case, Barack Obama's seated right next to Trump, and Trump's talking to him, and Barack Obama's laughing. And at some point, Kamala Harris looks over her shoulder with daggers at Barack Obama because she can't believe he's cutting it up with Donald Trump. So there was some high drama there, but I want to know if they really all greeted each other behind the scenes before they were brought out. What was that conversation like? That's what I want to know.
I don't believe that they were all greeting each other. I was reading some story, rather, about some person who's an expert at body language, and they were calling Kamala Harris the ice princess. The way she looked at Trump, the fact that she wouldn't even make eye contact with Jill Biden. Really, I should say Jill Biden wouldn't make eye contact with Kamala Harris.
That's it. That's
I think
it.
There's more animosity that direction.
That was my observation. The Bidens... Jill Biden escorted Joe Biden in because he didn't know where he was going. She held onto his hand. She took him to the seat. She was to sit to his from his left shoulder between him and Kamala, which set her right next to Kamala. They walked in there. She and Kamala didn't even make eye contact. Kamala reached down and took the papers off of her seat, which was the program, and handed it to her. And then she plopped down and looked straight ahead or at her husband. She made no eye contact with Kamala Harris. It was icy.
It's called awkward.
Awk. This is how my kids would say it at some point. It was awk. Wow. There were some nice moments from that funeral yesterday, though. Some nice comments from the grandson, and we'll play a little bit of that for you coming up just a little bit later. Up next, we'll get to Kim on a Whim. Stay tuned.
Kim on a Whim.
President Joe Biden recently signed a new law creating more transparency around college campus hazing. 3 years ago this fall, Danny Santulli's parents say their son was forced to drink an entire bottle of vodka before falling into a coma. It's left Danny with life-changing impacts.
Joe Biden did something I agree with, Mark.
And what's that?
And that was he signed into law the Stop Campus Hazing Act. Christmas Eve actually is when he signed it into law. This legislation, it was co-led by Minnesota Governor Amy Klobuchar. And this comes after the guy who you just heard in that story, Danny Santulli, was, he has permanent issues. This is a guy who was at Mizzou in 2021. He was pledging, it was the Phi Gamma Delta, which I'll be honest, I'm not super familiar with that fraternity. Is it Fiji? Okay, I've heard of Fiji. I guess you just don't hear it like that. But I was not in a sorority. So anyway, he was pledging, and they told him to drink a whole bottle of liquor, and he was drinking beer. And anyway, it sounds like the guys in the fraternity threw him on the couch, and he was found not breathing. They take him to the emergency room. He's in cardiac arrest. So at that point, it was kind of too late, and he suffered severe brain damage. He can't walk. He can't talk. He just sits there. It's really sad. You look at the before picture of this guy, and then you look at the after, and it's unrecognizable. So what this law does is it requires universities to include hazing incidents in their annual safety report. So that information would then be accessible to parents.
After the fact, it's not doing you any good, though. You see my point? Here's the thing, and I might piss some people off when I say this, but I was in a fraternity. I was hazed. I joined the fraternity of my own free will. And fortunately for me, although it definitely involved a certain amount of alcohol, I wasn't forced to drink anything except some disgusting thing the night I finally was accepted into the fraternity along with the paddle that I'm not still not sure what was in that mixture they gave me. But at some point you're not, other than shutting down the Greek system, you're not going to be able to pass a law that says you're not allowed to do this. It's not going to work. It's just not going to work. The liability factor is what they need to stress. They need to go into every one of these fraternities and sororities and tell them, yes, you can do hazing, which, like, for example, here's some stuff my son related to me when he was at Mizzou. What was hazing? Well, you had to carry a lighter with you. So if you saw somebody who was an upperclassman in your fraternity anywhere on campus and they needed you to light a cigarette, you had to have a lighter on you. Like, if they saw you, you had to have certain things with you. In one fraternity I know of, they required all the pledges to carry a brick around, like a full-size brick.
I can get on board with that type of hazing. Absolutely.
My point is, that's been going on since Animal House. That stuff has always happened, and it's going to continue to happen because it's a fraternity. Whether it's a fraternity or sorority, and the sororities don't do quite that stuff, but you're being accepted into a group, and the feeling is you need to pay the same kind of price they paid when they got in. So there's going to be hazing. The question is, do you allow it to go too far? And if you get the wrong group of guys, idiots in leadership, that's when things get out of hand.
But this law doesn't stop hazing from happening. What it does is any sort of an incident that escalates to the point where authorities are involved, that has to then be reported.
Okay,
that wouldn't be like something silly where, for example, you're carrying a brick around. That would be where you're forcing a pledge to drink an obscene amount of alcohol, and then they have issues because of it. Like, not even to this extent, but to the point where you're going to the hospital and getting your stomach pumped.
But that's after the fact, right?
But they'd still have to then report it. So then anyone who has kids pledging at that fraternity in future years would be able to access that information.
So here's a simpler fix. This is the simple fix. Like, the housing board and the people in charge of these fraternities need to set these guys down once a year and say, here's the deal. You're not allowed to force anybody to do anything that's dangerous, period. And if you do, you're not only going to face whatever legal charges their family files against you, you're kicked out of this fraternity forever.
Yeah.
And the university needs to say, and you're banned from this campus forever, and you're not going to be able to fulfill your dreams that you came to college to achieve. So don't do anything stupid. And that would have knocked off 100% of this. Here's the other problem. I know people in Fiji. I know kids that were in Fiji around the time this happened. If there was a fraternity on that campus that came anywhere close to what we fantasize about with Animal House years ago, I don't know if you've probably never even seen the movie. But, I mean, toga, party all the time, everybody had bad grades, all that stuff. That's not even necessarily the fact. A lot of these kids were very good students. Their GPA wasn't necessarily suffering because of it, but it was kind of the place where you knew if some crazy crap was going to go down, it was going to be at the Fiji House. Somebody there had to know that. So somebody in charge of that fraternity had to know they were on pretty dangerous ground with some of the crap they were allowing to happen there, and no adults stepped in to control the situation. They don't need a law like this, is my argument, because whatever they're reporting is after the fact. You need to scare the hell out of these kids in advance and tell them.
Why can't you have both and?
Why can't you scare the crap out of them?
But then also, there will be some that could fall through the cracks. I think parents should know, and people pledging these fraternities should be able to access that information to know, if I'm wanting to be in this fraternity, this is the kind of crap that they've done in the past. Listen to what the mom of this boy, Danny Santoli, listen to what she said about any guy who wants to pledge a fraternity. Listen to this other
Any kids are feeling like they're uncomfortable in any situation, they just need to have strength just to say no.
Okay. In an ideal world,
who was the mom
of a kid, Danny Santoli, who was told to drink all this alcohol and now has brain damage and all the things. Again, this happened in 2021. So that's the mom of this kid, this guy, talking. saying that you should be strong enough to say no. Okay, yeah, obviously that's the goal, is to be able to be strong enough to say no.
The peer pressure is incredible.
Thank you. If I were up against 100 or so, I don't know how many people were in a fraternity, let's just say 50 to 100 people, depending on the size of the frat. If you have all those upperclassmen who are telling you to do this and you want to be part of this group, part of this fraternity, how many guys would actually sit there, not just guys, girls too, would sit there and say, you know what, guys, I'm not comfortable doing this. I think I'm going to opt out this time. No, they would not do that. That would be so incredibly difficult. So I understand where she's going with that, but that's just not realistic. It's not going to happen in 9 out of 10 cases.
It's not going to repair the damage that was done to her child. Several lives have been ruined as a result of this, right?
Well,
several kids have been sentenced to jail.
Yes, they were facing criminal charges, and rightfully so.
And fined and, like, ruined financially, kicked out of school.
Yep.
That case should be explained to every fraternity every year at the beginning of Rush. This is what happens if you go too far. Don't let this be you. They need to do this like they do with the MAD presentations at the schools, where they drag the mangled car into the front of the school and they bring the kids out and let them look at it and say, this is what can happen to you if you do this.
Drag the kids who faced criminal charges, drag them along to these universities and let them speak to the fraternities. Let them tell the other kids, this is how our life was impacted because of this really stupid decision that we made.
I agree with you, but you can't get to all of them.
No, obviously not.
To me, the bill is paying lip service to this, and it doesn't fix the problem.
It doesn't.
I was in a fraternity.
It's a step in the right direction.
And it is mild compared to what it used to be. Mild. It's nothing like it was in the late 60s, 70s, 80s. These days, they can't hardly get away with anything. They're not, in many cases, they're not supposed to have alcohol in the building. They're not, I mean, they have alcohol-free Rush. They've got all these other things, but there's always somebody out there who's an idiot who carries it too far. So I don't know. I just think the reporting it afterwards is not helping anybody. You've got to be more proactive, short of banning Greek life, and make these people in leadership at these fraternities realize on day one that you decisions you make can end somebody's life.
I don't think it's going to stop it, but I still would argue that it's a step in the right direction because, again, that information's then accessible to people.
It's the reason I hate to say this, but it's frontal lobes are not fully developed at that point in a lot of people, specifically young males, and they do stupid things. It's why you can't let kids make gender decisions when they're 14 and 15 years old. They don't have any idea what the hell they're going to do with their lives at that point. So you've just got to take them by the shoulders and shake them and tell them, you could end somebody's life with this crap.
You do both.
You're never allowed to force anybody into a dangerous situation.
You do that too. That absolutely has to be part of it. That should be the number one thing they do. But anything else we can do to make it, to raise awareness about the crap that is going on, I think is a good thing.
My phone is ringing right now. If anybody can see this on social media, it's my kid's school calling off, I'm pretty sure, right now.
Like,
if I recognize
that
number.
Speakerphone.
If I recognize that number, let me see here.
Let's bring in the professionals to see what they think.
Hi, this is Fox 2 Chief Meteorologist Glenn.
You see, they're playing.
All the weather models and looking into the future, and the forecast for Westminster, well, to quote Charles Dickens, it was the best of times.
So
that's the way they call off school. Is that what they're doing?
They quote the local meteorologist. It's something funny each time, and it sounds to me like they're calling school off. So
remember when we had to watch the ticker at the bottom of the TV screen morning before school?
Oh, Kim, you have no idea.
And just hope that your school would pop up, and then you'd miss it because wouldn't they do it alphabetical? And I would miss Parkway West, and I'd have to wait until it came around again. How times have changed.
Carl and I had to get up and turn the radio on.
Or your parents did.
And you had to listen to, I don't know, KMOX or, for my case in Cincinnati, WEBN, and they would read the school closing list alphabetically, mm-hmm. and sometimes it's 200 schools long.
Right.
So you had to wait for them to finally get to that part of the alphabet
well,
where your school was.
You had to take your covered wagon to school, so they had plenty of time for you to prepare, right?
All right, that's enough. I've taken enough abuse. Go to break. We'll be back in a minute. Wow. All right, dudes. Sit down if you're not sitting down driving already. Do you know how old this guy is today? Rod Stewart is 80 years old today. He's 80. Wow.
And coming to St. Louis next
summer. Still on tour. So still packing that money away in the bank for the kids.
I'm more surprised Dave Matthews is 57 or 58 more than Rod Stewart. I expected Rod Stewart to be close to 80.
So we've been listening to Sue, and an hour ago when we went on the air here at 5, I said to you, the snow is a nothing burger so far, but the snow has picked up. So as we look out the windows here downtown, you can definitely see it falling much heavier than it was as we were driving in here in the 4 o'clock hour. So I imagine in the next couple of hours, this is going to cause bigger and bigger problems for Sue Thomas. So be sure and stay tuned for that because here's the deal. I saw somebody put this on a meme. I'm not going to take credit for it, but you need to leave your car parked. Those of you that can't drive when it's sunny should not be driving when there's a snowflake coming down. Let's just put it that way.
Well, that means a lot of people then shouldn't be on the roads today.
I know. I'm just saying. A lot of folks are driving and probably shouldn't be. But, I mean, the roads are going to have a little bit of snow on them this morning. It's not ice. It's 28, 29 degrees outside, so it's not like it's 3 degrees. And I think you'll be okay if you just take it easy, take it slow, leave a little bit early, and you'll get there. All right, so I want to get to one of the bites from the Carter ceremony yesterday for his funeral. I saw a couple clips from Joe Biden. He seemed to be taking some digs at Donald Trump, even though he never mentions him by name, talks about integrity and blah, 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 blah up there. And there were a couple of people who worked for him who made some nice comments about Carter and what he achieved in his life, which is what your funeral is supposed to be about. I did think this was an interesting comment by this guy on CNN who pointed out that you had an 82-year-old sitting there, the current president, and you had a 78-year-old who's the incoming president. You had Bill Clinton, who's up there in his 70s, late 70s now, too, and Hillary sitting there, and Al Gore, and Dan Quayle, and, I mean, all these people who aren't all that far away from being where Jimmy Carter is, because they're all not going to live to 100. So listen to cut number 10.
Yeah, and as I read in the story that's up on our site, this is a weird situation because Joe Biden is going to today attend a funeral that will look a lot like his own funeral whenever that day comes.
Ouch.
That is weird to think about that.
He did doze off in the middle of it. I don't know if he was practicing or what.
That's to be expected.
Yeah, he did. It was a long ceremony, but Joe Biden was clearly asleep at one point, as was the wife or the person sitting next to Chip Carter, Carter's son there in the front row. They cut away to her one time, and she was in the middle of her head bouncing off her chest and waking up when the camera panned over there, which you felt bad about that for her. Maybe she's got some health condition I don't know about.
I feel like it's the ultimate old man move when you're sitting up straight and you just doze off randomly.
You nod off. I've never done that.
Something tells me you have.
Well, when you're in a covered wagon, the ride is so bumpy.
I get it. It is bumpy.
It's harder to sleep.
I get it. That's
I'm
a long
saying.
Journey you used it, to have
it,
to make,
it
Mark.
It's true. Thank you, Kim. Could you turn her mic off? Let's get to Jason Carter here, the grandson, who I thought had probably delivered the best speech of the entire funeral yesterday.
By the way, he cut the deficit, wanted to decriminalize marijuana, deregulated so many industries that he gave us cheap flights and, as you heard, craft beer. Basically, all of those years ago, he was the first millennial. And he could make great playlists, as we've heard as well.
He's the first millennial. He gave us craft beer and wanted to make marijuana available everywhere.
I love the story his grandson said where Jimmy Carter called him, said, "Who is this?
Why are you calling me?
You called me." I did? No, I was taking a picture.
Everybody's got that experience with an aunt or an uncle or a parent, a grandparent for sure, with these new phones. Oh, boy. All right. Coming up, we're going to get to Jessica Rosenthal on the Supreme Court decision on TikTok. We'll be back.
Get more at 971talk.com.